California, the 7th of January, 1974. It was exactly 40 years ago, on the first Sunday of 1934, when I was not quite 4 years of age, that my father began on the air. There was a program started by the FCC of equal time, in a sense, of representation for all faiths and religions as public service broadcast, which was even free time donated by radio in those days. Pastors all over Eugene, Oregon, were contacted by a local radio station and asked whether or not they would want to give a 15-minute devotional talk of some sort early in the morning. I think something like 6:15 or 6:30 in the morning. Finally, it came my father's turn, and when he did do that 15-minute program, this sometime late in 1933, he had an unusual response. A lot of people called, and several letters came into the station saying that he had a good radio voice. They were interested in the message. They wondered if he was going to speak again. Well, that response was overwhelming to the radio station manager of KORE. He called my father, all of this long since recorded in his autobiography, and asked him whether he would consider starting his own radio program. Well, he didn't even begin to know where he would get the money to do such a thing as that. But he talked to a few of the faithful brethren of the Church of God in the Oregon area of that time and managed to get those people to subscribe to about, I think, $2.50, as I recall, a week. And then he would have to come up with the other $2.50 himself in some way. And that's what the broadcast cost. And he began on the air in that way. Uninterruptedly, then, for the last 40 years, that radio program has continued. Until today, it utilizes somewhere between 25 to 30 million watts of power every week. It's heard by millions upon millions every week on every continent. The Plain Truth magazine, which began in the same month of 1934, was a small handful of mimeographed papers put together by a staple and called The Plain Truth and hand-addressed by my mother, Mrs. Herbert W. Armstrong, and sent to a small list of people in the Oregon Valley, where today The Plain Truth magazine is 2,591,988 in the English language edition alone and is published in several other languages worldwide. Well, I thought it would be interesting for some of you listeners to the World Tomorrow of Long Term to go back and give you a few excerpts from programs along the way. First, I want you to hear the 1959 broadcast, just a few moments of each. This made on the occasion of our 25th anniversary program by my father, Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong.
The World Tomorrow. The Radio Church of God presents Herbert W. Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
Well, greetings, friends around the world. This is the 25th anniversary program of The World Tomorrow on the air. Now, 25 years ago today, this program started on the air. On the first Sunday in 1934, God's time had come. God opened the door. Jesus Christ himself had foretold this event. Millions have read his prophecy in the Bible. And yet on that first Sunday in 1934, probably no one, certainly most of all, not I myself, recognized what a momentous event actually was taking place right then. What really occurred that Sunday morning precisely at 10 o'clock was a momentous event. It was the fulfilling of a definite cornerstone prophecy of Jesus Christ. More than that, it was the initial start-off event to the fulfilling of some 90% of all of the prophecies of your Bible. But there was no fanfare. The world took no notice. Only a few hundred, at most a very few thousand people even heard it. But God's time had come at precisely 10 a.m., 10 o'clock, 1934, and 10:30 that morning, that very historic morning, a few hundred, perhaps a very few thousand people heard a shocking half-hour message. These people all lived in just one little county up in Oregon, in the United States of America, and the program that they heard then was called Radio Church of God. Soon it became the most listened to program on that little 100-watt station, then the only station in Lane County, Oregon. And after several months, we added another station, KXL. It was in Portland, and then only a 100-watt
And after adding KXL in Portland, he went on a station in Seattle, eventually into a local station down in the Hollywood area, which later became a very powerful station. KLAC used to have the old call letters of KMTR. And gradually the work grew with that radio broadcast, covering the entirety of the United States as it went on some of the big Mexican stations, later on big superpower 50,000-watt radio stations in various parts of the United States, including WHO Des Moines, WLS Chicago, including other big 50 KW stations all over the southeast of the United States, in the east and north, and at one time the major O&O, as they are called, owned and operated stations of the ABC network. And just recently, by the way, we began on WOR Radio in New York City, where we're on five times every single week, weeknights at 10:30 p.m., and twice again on Sunday. And so the program continued to grow from that very first Sunday of 1934 to begin to blanket the United States and Canada and to reach abroad around the world. Let's go back and see how completely different the program was in the earlier years. Here's a broadcast of August 22nd in 1940 with war news everywhere evident, the world headed toward World War II, the terrible Battle of Britain, the Battle of London, underway in that precise month, and I was only 10 years of age.
And the only true gospel is the good news of the kingdom of God. And I wish that I had time to just go on and show you more of how this kingdom is going to be ruled when Jesus comes. Just one little verse telling us how he ruled, the fourth verse of the 11th chapter of Isaiah. But with righteousness shall he judge the poor, and reprove with equity the meek of the earth, and he shall smite the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips shall he slay the wicked. And so, just finally, let me give you one little bit of a comparison. Hitler's plan of government will be national socialism, but God's plan is theocracy. Hitler thinks the world will be ruled by the Aryan race of Germans. God says the saints will rule the world after they're made immortal. Hitler's object is the enslavement of the world. God's object is the liberation and the freedom of the world. Hitler means contempt.
The scratchy sounds you heard on that program mean that that was the use of an acetate disc. The way the broadcast had to be recorded in those days, of course, was the big old acetate disc or platter that you're so familiar with. The recording. We didn't have tape recording in those days. We didn't have the versatility of radio equipment. But you can hear even the tone of voice that my father was led in those days to see biblical hope for world peace. We could see the entirety of Europe beginning to be gobbled up by Adolf Hitler. I remember so well in that 1940, sitting with my chin in my hands in the living room, listening to the crackling voice of Sir Winston Churchill, the tolling of the bell of Big Ben in the background over the BBC broadcast we received, and also, many times, listening to the ranting, screaming voices of Adolf Hitler and Benito Mussolini. A very real time of fright and fear and worry for the United States of America, that August 22nd, 1940. Well, after World War II, the beginning of Ambassador College came to be reality in 1947. We moved down to the Pasadena area, and finally, our own radio studios were established in the library building on the Pasadena campus. Next, you'll hear an excerpt of the very first broadcast to originate in our own studios in Pasadena, California.
The World Tomorrow. At the same time every week, Herbert W. Armstrong analyzes today's news with the prophecies of the world tomorrow. Well, greetings, friends. War talk was in the air again this past week. War fears being revived. But again, I say that war now with Russia is not likely, and in a moment I'll tell you precisely why. But first, though, before bringing you the real facts back of the Russian crisis in Berlin and the predestined course of prophecy, I want to take just a moment to tell you this is the first broadcast to originate in our own new radio studios at our own Ambassador College in Pasadena, California. Several of my family members on this occasion because to us...
My father always took careful note of milestones in the development of the World Tomorrow broadcast on the air and has done many of the anniversary programs himself. He was unable to this time because of being called away once again to Japan, where he is going to take several members of the Diet of Japan on a trip down to Kuwait. And as I told my father before he left on this recent trip, there is no one I would rather have along to introduce me to leaders of an Arab oil state than some of the Japanese Diet, or in other words, the Japanese Parliament. Now listen to another milestone in the World Tomorrow program, one made on the occasion of the very first broadcast to ever go to Europe over Radio Luxembourg, this occurring in January of 1953.
The World Tomorrow. At the same time every week, Herbert W. Armstrong analyzes today's news with the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends. World-famous scientists are planning to visit and to explore the moon. They report now that this will be accomplished in 25 years. The very thought of mortal man leaving this earth whenever he pleases, visiting other planets far off in space and returning safely to the earth, staggers the imagination. The idea seems fantastic, but so did the idea of flying at all only a few years ago.
Actually, scientists were off in that prediction, weren't they? They said 25 years, which would have been about 1978. They made it far sooner than that. Then came the 21st anniversary program, recorded off the air on radio station WLS from Chicago when the World Tomorrow program finally reached legal age of 21.
The World Tomorrow. This is the 21st anniversary of The World Tomorrow on the air. With this 21st anniversary program, The World Tomorrow will be heard every night except Saturday on WLS. Sunday nights at 8:30. Mondays through Fridays at 10 o'clock. Sunday mornings at 11:30. Now, here is Herbert W. Armstrong with his inspiring transcribed analysis of The World Tomorrow.
Well, greetings, friends. This is Herbert W. Armstrong with the good news of the world tomorrow. Did you hear the big news today? It wasn't good. World news today is bad. It offers no hope. It looks worse for tomorrow, so far as the news is.
And that sounds like a lot of our World Tomorrow programs, doesn't it? Sounds like a lot of mine that I've made in the past. People hear you come on and say the good news of the world tomorrow, but you say the news today is bad. Well, you know, it hasn't changed from that time to this. It's still pretty bad when you look in the daily newspaper. Many people have difficulty reconciling how you can call the program good news. Well, that's the whole point. The good news is going to be in the world tomorrow. There's not an awful lot of it we can look at today. Neither was there back in that time of the 21st anniversary program. It had to be recorded off the air. Air, by the way, through a radio reception on the west coast of WLS Chicago. And you heard that, scratchy though it might have been, re-recorded. Now, this next one is embarrassing for me personally, because as a young man of 25, I did my very first daily program back in November of 1955. I had already been a guest on the television program. My father did 26 in a row in that same year. And actually, I had spoken on television before I ever did on radio. You'll hear a little bit of difference, but perhaps a little bit of similarity, too, in this first daily program I recorded back in November of 1955.
And greetings, friends around the world. This is Garner Ted Armstrong with the good news of the world tomorrow. What a paradox. A world preparing for war and shouting peace, peace. A nation filled with national crimes and sins and saying it is a Christian nation. A people who have forgotten their God and claim to be worshiping him fervently. Recently, as the world staggered around the eggnog.
Well, the voice was a little excitable, and you can imagine why. If you had been invited to do a radio program for the first time in your entire life and had a few notes before you and were a little bit nervous about what you were going to say, I suppose you might have been a little excitable, too. I can't believe, frankly, the changes that have taken place from that time to this, but the message is still pretty much the same. Well, it was along in the Gemini Thorogena shots on the race to go to the moon from Cape Kennedy that we came up with the concept of on-the-spot radio broadcasting. A very dear personal friend and I were together, his name, Lyle Christofferson. He was instrumental in the beginning of these on-the-spot radio programs. We were down there to see the launch, a twin launch, of two big missiles to rendezvous in space. This is the GTA series, by some strange coincidence. And I took that to mean something significant because the badge I wore in the press site had GTA 8 on it. And those, of course, are my initials. But here you'll hear the very first on-the-spot radio broadcast.
This is Garner Ted Armstrong speaking to you from Cape Kennedy in Florida, where only moments ago, Mr. Lyle Christofferson, staff photographer for the Plain Truth magazine, and I witnessed a liftoff of the Atlas Agena space vehicle, and only about an hour later, the liftoff of Gemini 8. We were accredited press representatives allowed into the press area number 2, and Ms. Christofferson was about 1,000 yards closer to the actual liftoff site than I. What occurred? as being awesome. A very, very shaking experience, something that I certainly will never forget. And perhaps the most awesome part of the whole thing is realizing what kind of men these must be to strap themselves on their back over what is literally something like a huge bullet.
That was the first of many programs done from Cape Kennedy all the way to man landing on the moon. It was also the beginning of many on-the-spot radio programs that I have done since in many parts of the world and all over the United States. And they've been on every conceivable subject, all the way from some of the most deeply spiritual and religious down to geopolitical problems regarding energy or space, interurban problems, race, crime, you name it. If we have been there on the spot, whether sites of World War II graveyards or this one, a very interesting one, I think, because of the supercharged atmosphere I felt at the time, my very first experience to be in Jerusalem and to be inside the tomb where Jesus Christ of Nazareth was buried. This is an excerpt from the Garden Tomb. This is Garner Ted Armstrong speaking to you from inside the Garden Tomb in Jerusalem, Jordan. There's a great deal of echo here. I am seated on a little bench provided for that, facing an iron grillwork gate dividing this tomb in half. Obviously, it was a family tomb meant for, at the very least, four, if not more, persons. Right before me are what appear to be sepulchers for three, and just the barest outlines of them remaining. Three sides carved into solid rock, and the fourth with either the grooves still there or else a part of the slab which was set in the grooves still remaining, and over one of them the piece of the cap which would have been a solid stone lid placed over the top of the sepulchre or the sarcophagus. This is obviously it. You'll notice the hollow rumbling sound you heard because I was in a rock-hewn tomb. That in the old Jerusalem, still in the hands of Jordan, as I said very plainly on the tape. This then was early in 1966, prior to the Jew-Arab War of 1967. I went from there to various locales in Europe. One of them was a very large American military cemetery. I've said humorously over past years that I feel world leaders ought to meet in military graveyards, totally in the nude, to discuss world peace. Now, I say that humorously and partly in truth, because I believe they might make much more progress if they could be standing on the tombs or the gravestones of fallen thousands of young men, bereft and stripped of all the falderal and nonsense of uniforms and caps and distinguished paraphernalia, looking at each other as human beings and looking at the spectacle of an endless series of crosses or of gravestones and discuss terms for world peace. I was quite shaken, as I never ceased to be, in going to some of these places where thousands and tens of thousands of Americans and those of other races have fallen in some of man's useless and most futile wars. But this, an excerpt of a program I made on May 8, 1966 in Anzio, Italy. And greeting friends around the world. This is Garner Ted Armstrong speaking from Anzio Nettuno in Italy. I'm in the middle of one of the large American military cemeteries. On top of the area where marked by a cross are these words. Here rests in honored glory a comrade in arms known but to God. Stretching on all sides of me are huge long rows of mute white crosses of solid marble. The World Tomorrow program is not only in the English language and does not only include on-the-spot radio programs and coverage of significant news events and some of the major assemblies of scientific conventions, political conventions, and others, but also is broadcast in other languages around the world. Let me give you a brief excerpt from each of these to show you a little bit. And by the way, I don't do the foreign language ones with the exception of being the announcer for the Spanish language broadcast. But here are the excerpts of our foreign language broadcasts.
Le monde à venir.
A buon entendeur, salut. Qu'est-ce donc que la vie?
Amici italiani, benvenuti. Che cosa volete dalla vita?
Die Welt von morgen.
Hier spricht Erhard Klammer. Ich begrüße Sie recht herzlich und bringe Ihnen wieder gute Nachrichten.
Saludos, amigos. He usado toda clase de drogas y narcóticos. Desde la marihuana.
I could actually only understand one of those, and that was the latter one. One of the most difficult programs I ever did in my life, though, was the one within about 5 minutes following the announcement that President Kennedy had been assassinated in Dallas. I was in Pasadena. I heard the news and rushed directly to a television set of one of the house mothers of the girls' dormitories, the closest ones, where a whole group of the ministers and the faculty members and I gathered around, thunderstruck because we had been in a meeting, a manpower meeting, I think we called it, trying to come up with various assignments among ministers and others for this great worldwide work. And suddenly the switchboard called, interrupted that meeting and said President Kennedy had been shot. We went to the nearest television set we could find. We watched with fascination, awe, disbelief, anger, and shock those events, as even the newsmen themselves were trying to make heads or tails of what had happened in Dallas. And just barely before 12 noon on the Pacific coast, I heard the words, "Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States is dead," and then heard the national anthem. I was emotionally shaken by this. November 22nd, 1963. And I had to go directly into the radio studio and ad-lib a broadcast. Outraged as I was, not having all the facts, I too perhaps felt that we as a nation were guilty of a great collective national sin. Here's the way it was that November 22nd, 1963. And greetings, friends around the world. This is Garner Ted Armstrong with the good news of the world tomorrow. And the bad and the tragic news of this world today in these terrifying, tragic times in which we're living. The President of the United States, John F. Kennedy, is dead. Of the bullets of an assassin, a senseless, hideous, meaningless crime, just barely before I come on the air to give you this news today. And as the full import of this tragic and senseless act sinks into the national conscience of our peoples, can we begin to realize the immense proportions of these times? Can we begin to realize the frightening meaning? That broadcast, by the way, was so well received by millions of listeners across the United States that many, many thousands of telephone calls went into many different radio stations, among them some that aired that program twice without even charging for the time because they thought it had certain relevance. Perhaps I was feeling a little bit like the national conscience, but I think if you can remember very well your own feelings of that November 22nd, 1963, you can understand why. This next excerpt was an on-the-spot radio program done from a place very much in the news of recent date, the Golan Heights overlooking the Sea of Galilee in northern Israel. This was done on August 8, 1968, just a little more than a year after the Jew-Arab 67 Six-Day War.
And greetings from the Golan Heights. I'm standing atop a gun bunker, looking down a very precipitous slope past barbed wire. And right directly beneath me, almost, are the lagoons, a row of trees, and beautiful green fields of some of the Israeli kibbutzim, which were operating here and trying to grow crops right under the very gun muscles of the Syrians who occupied these heights. Right behind me and approaching with a large Israeli army entourage is United Nations Special Representative George Ball, who only moments before we...
One of the most inspiring sights I've ever seen in my life was the liftoff of some of those giant Apollo missiles in the Apollo shots from Cape Kennedy. This next excerpt takes you to Cape Kennedy on May 16th, 1969.
And greetings from Launch Site 39 from the press site at Cape Kennedy Space Center in Florida. The wind is picking up, and I'm having to shield it with my hand to prevent wind blasts on the microphone. Our cameras are running, and all eyes are poised on that giant bird over there. 36 stories of it, faintly smoking, fully loaded with liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen. Its giant five first-stage engines are destined to begin in just a few seconds now. The countdown ignition sequence has started. Engines are on. We already see the flame, and there it goes, a huge blast of flame, and in a moment it's going to strike us with a giant shock wave. They have liftoff. I can just see the flame. There's a huge cloud of smoke that momentarily has obscured the missile. I cannot see it. The tower is clear. Now the shock waves begin to reach us here, and there it goes. A spectacular, stately, fantastic sight. A giant series of staccato rumbles booming this direction as the gallery behind me breaks into spontaneous applause. A little tiny thin cloud cover, the flame now not visible. The missile again will be visible in just a few moments. It's a very thin little bank of cloud, shaking the ground all around me, rattling my pants legs, reverberating everywhere. Cameraman, cranking it on up as that giant 36
tail of that missile. It is as brilliant as the sun, so bright. It's almost impossible to look at it. I now see it very clearly in a big, bright blue hole as it's arching on up, bending over slightly. Now a vapor trail develops outside the cone as I still see the flame. Bending over ever so slightly downrange, the giant tongue of flame.
Well, there you have it, a brief resume of the World Tomorrow program, formerly called the Radio Church of God, back in the late 30s and early 40s, in a 40-year history of uninterrupted broadcasting on the air. I believe the World Tomorrow program in that time has become something of an institution in the United States, Canada, and for that matter, Australia, South Africa, and much of the rest of the world. If you want, at long last, if you're a long-time listener, to find out what's behind the World Tomorrow program, then you ought to write for your copy of the free booklet, This Is Ambassador College, and This Is the Worldwide Church of God. Those two booklets show you what is the college and what is the church that are behind this radio program. In the meantime, you ought to write for the current number, this January 1974 number of the Plain Truth magazine. Upcoming articles in the next issue will be A New Era of Peace, The New Vatican Role in the Middle East, Reconstructing 2,000 Years of History, a very vital article on Japan and her stake in the Middle East. And my father, Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong, is on his way from Japan with members of the Japanese Parliament to Kuwait, just about as I talk to you on this program now. So if you want current, in-depth, meaningful articles about the really important world affairs that matter, be sure to get your name on the mailing list of the Plain Truth magazine. For your free copies of these two booklets and the Plain Truth magazine, send your name and address to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. And so, until next time, and I hope it's not another 40 years from now, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your request to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California, 91123. Or you may call toll-free 800-423-4444.